Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. I am Mickey Desai, one of your hosts. Around the table today, we've got Don. Are you with us?
I am here.
Becca, you there?
I am here.
And Ben?
I'm here.
Our man Ben is here, and as always, well, I shouldn't say as always, since for the second time, Jessica is hiding in the background, so she's going to help us with our social media agenda.
Hello.
Yeah, there she is. I am going to start this episode by talking about a question that I put forth on our Facebook page. I basically asked, if The Thing About Cars were to become a television show, what kind of segments would you like to see? The funny thing is we got a wide variety of responses, and the more ridiculous ones were things along the lines of musical numbers. My friend Brian said, you should do musical numbers, and I'm like, yeah, that's not going to happen.
I don't think he's heard us sing.
Right. I mean, I can sing, and I can sing bass. I can sing bass, and Ben can play bass.
Right.
But I don't know that, you know, we could actually come up with, like, you know, can you come up with the hook, right?
Well, I can't drive 55. Right. I mean,
I tell you this, something every time I have a friend who's in a band or what have you, I try to beg them to remake a song just for me, you know, Christmas present, birthday present. Nobody will ever do it.
What, Mustang Sally?
Well, no, Mustang Sally works as is, but Little Red Corvette. If you insert Little White Mustang, it fits perfectly. I just want somebody to sing a version with White Mustang instead of Red Corvette, and nobody will do it for me. I've been asking for years.
Becca, have you got enough gas? Oh yeah.
So this is why we're not going to do musical numbers.
Okay. Although, you know, with enough electronic studio wizardry, our reedy croaks can be made to sound like the voices of angels.
All right. Another gentleman says, William Rohde says, explain turn signals and headlights or lights in general when raining. And I'm like, yeah, we've done that before on the podcast before. I'm not sure that's an ongoing segment for the show.
And we can explain it. We just can't understand it for everybody.
Yeah.
So.
we have explained it. We've explained it a number of times. Robert Drake, our good friend Robert Drake, says, do an actual rolling of the car with force meters tracking all the forces exerted on the car as it's rolling. And I'm wondering why Robert came up with that. I'm wondering if he's rolled a car in the past, because this is sort of a one shot. We're going to do it on the show once, right? We can't roll a car. If we ever luck out and find our way into television production, I don't think there's going to be a weekly rolling of the car. Do you?
Unless it's the same car over and over.
I mean, once would be pretty fun.
Once would be
fun, as long as, you know, I'm not in it.
What if it's like it's a passage, a rite of initiation, that we have a guest, and in order to be on the show, you have to roll a car?
Oh,
and here's one. Do we tip it over? Do we push it into the roll, or does it get that way through excessive maneuvering? And if that's the latter, then is that in Ronnie's skill set?
I don't think any insurance company is going to sign off on this endeavor.
I think MythBusters did one of those.
Yeah, I think so too.
Get a really old like CJ5 and just go rock crawling. It'll do the rest for you.
It'll do the rest.
There you go.
Alan Watts, my friend Alan Watts says, explain the nuances of insurance /title/tags and how not to screw those up. And I'm thinking, that's at the very least, that's a guest we have to have, even if it's boring.
Okay. You know.
But Don, unfortunately, my previous life, I spent 14 years in insurance. So we've actually done insurance episodes before. So yes.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Here's one you guys are going to like. It's my friend Nancy Lucas says, how women, in parentheses, not to stereotype, but believe it or not, we are typically stereotyped, close parentheses. She says, how women can go into a repair shop, oil change place, tire place, parts place, and not get scammed or scared into spending more money or doing more than required. Smart things to know and smart questions to ask. So I think she's getting at teaching women how to take those scammers and hold them by the collar and make them behave.
Okay.
Yeah, That's actually would be very good. And we could do an undercover thing.
That I like that.
Interesting.
And that would be an excellent ongoing segment. We could do like, you know, Thing About Cars mystery shopping event when we just film somebody, you know, and film.
And then Becca pulls her ninja moves out and says, that rotor is perfectly fine.
Exactly. And no, you don't need an EGR valve. And no, there is no such thing as blinker fluid.
oh my goodness.
Right. Some other things we said, Tim, our good friend Tim, frequent contributor to the show, he actually says do a new and upcoming car segment. Yeah, we would love to do that.
Test drive, obviously.
Yep. I can't remember who else suggested it, but what's your latest car repair or modification segment? And things may all be Tim's. Memorable drives, we can talk about track days, trips, things that they've done with their hobbies, what's your favorite or least favorite car owned. So there's plenty of ways to tell the story. And I think for me, at least, there's clearly a lot of desire to have us do like Nancy Muller is, Nancy says, have a call-in feature where they try to stump the experts, you know, like the Car Talk guys used to have Stump the Chumps, but they did theirs a little frequently. They did theirs in reverse, you know, they would give the advice and then later they would revisit the advice and decide if it was the right advice or not. And in our case, you know, we could just have the diagnosis portion. Someone drives into the shop with the car problem and we can all take a look at it. And whoever gets the correct answer wins, I don't know, internet points or something. but I think that's not a bad idea. You know, it can challenge us to correctly identify the problem with the car and then the first one to fix it wins or something like that. So there's cool ideas here. And I guess what we need help with now is figuring out how to write an actual TV treatment and to meet people in the industry who would help us craft this thing into a television program. I think that would be a cool dream to shoot for.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, I've wasted too much time on that topic. Let's talk about, Ben, you've been working on the Lotus lately.
I have. Yeah. Did a fair amount of work, many hours yesterday and into the night. And, so to catch everybody up, I had the head off. I'd gone through some trials and tribulations with the valve clearances. This is one of these, you know, valve trains where you have to change shims to adjust the clearance. You know, little pieces of metal that are, you know, down under there between the tappet and the end of the valve stem. So, you know, you have to take the cams out to do this, and it's much easier to do it if you've got the head off the engine, which I did already. So I learned that a bunch of my shims, due to the shape of them, were actually interfering with the collets and retainers on the valves, giving me false readings. It would go from way too much clearance to none, and I was kind of scratching my head and going, huh?
So wait a minute. When you say false readings, what are you using to take the readings?
Feeler gauge.
Ah, okay.
You know, it's a thin strip of metal, you know, about the size of a, you know, piece of a popsicle stick that is, you know, machined to a very precise thickness.
Yeah.
You slide it in there between the camshaft and the top of the tappet, and you can determine what the clearance is.
I see.
Clearance.
Right.
Sorry.
But I'd go from having too much to having just no clearance and couldn't figure out why. And it turns out, well, some of these shims, I mean, some of them are shaped like little discs. Others are more like a, you know, much smaller diameter, almost like a cylindrical thing with a hole in one end that fits over the end of the valve stem. And those were the ones causing the problems, because the depth of the hole, I mean, the thickness between the bottom of the hole and the opposite face was correct, but that edge that hangs down that goes around the end of the valve stem was basically too long and was causing the interference.
Mm-hmm.
So I wound up having to grind a bunch of those down to where they wouldn't, you know, cause the interference. I got it all put together, got all my clearances good, assembled the head back onto the engine, got the cam chain back on and under tension and everything, and I spin it around a few times. Everything's great. Nothing's banging. The marks are staying lined up. Then I go to put in some of the last few bolts around the front of the head, just in the area that houses the cam chain, and some of the holes aren't lining up.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I've got to untorque the head, which, you know, it's, and I just converted it from bolts securing the head to studs securing the head, these nice monstrous studs that are sunk into the block. There's something like, oh, what is it? I think it's 55, you know, pound feet of torque on each nut. I've got to untorque all of them in sequence, of course. I remove everything except the head itself, where it's, you know, laying there unencumbered, and try to nudge it, push it, whatever, and these holes are still not lining up. And so I, you know, consult the wisdom of the internet. There's a really good forum for these cars with some guys who race them and who've worked on them for decades. And they all kind of read everything and said, well, I think those studs are the problem.
Oh, aha.
I said, well, why is that? And they said, because they're much thicker than the original bolts. And so they don't allow as much jiggling around with the head.
Yeah.
And I think they're right, because there are some little collars that go at the top, basically like a washer under the nuts that go on the studs. They're not exactly a washer, because they've also got a little collar that goes down into the hole that the stud comes up through.
Right.
Basically centers the studs in the hole. So even with those removed and the edges of the holes right up against the studs, I still couldn't get enough clearance for those bolts, another clearance.
So you're saying your studs are too studly.
Yeah. Well,
Do you have any idea how much restraint I've had? I mean, Ben, you're killing me. We've got heads and holes and studs and banging, and I'm doing everything I can not to blurt out jokes. I'm biting my lip over here.
Should we take a moment of silence for Becca's predicament?
That was very challenging for me. I had so many jokes.
Well, I was trying to really follow Ben and all the technical, you know, pieces of it. And then I'm like, oh my God, there's a joke in here somewhere, but I'm just so enraptured. Oh, there it is.
No, it was all over the place. I need to go have a cigarette now. Thanks.
So Ben, did you get it all sorted out?
Well, not yet. I haven't had time to come back to it yet, but I think what I'm going to have to do is remove those studs.
Yeah.
And that is going to be a booger of a job.
Yeah, I bet.
Because they not only have a fair amount of torque on them, but their threads were, you know, pretty liberally coated with some thread locking compound.
Oh no!
Hey, would this be like the time that I discovered somebody used red thread lock on the bolts on the brakes on the Pontiac?
Maybe. These things are, I think, a 3/8 thread, so they're pretty chunky. So that's a lot of surface area to glue up with this stuff. Because the thought putting them in was, I don't ever want them to come loose.
Right.
Now I do want them to come loose.
Right.
At least they're in an iron block, so it's not like I'm going to seriously screw up the threads if I get medieval on it.
Does it help if you heat up the block first or something?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. You just gotta be careful what lines are there.
Heat is always good for softening up any of those thread adhesive compounds, especially red ones. You know, but it's an iron block. There's nothing real critical, you know, close to where the holes are. Okay. So I think I can do it pretty safely.
Do you have an impact gun?
I do not. But the thing is, I also do not have a proper stud removal tool either. So
I was about to say, I have an impact gun and some joints, but I don't think I can help you with the stud removal tool. I like to keep studs around. So.
Right. Yeah, these things just stick straight up and they've got a threaded end up at the top. So you have various options to remove them. An actual stud removal tool is fairly pricey, but and a lot of people out there are going to cringe and scream when I say this, but if I just clamp my biggest honking vice grip on them, heat them up real good and yank with all my might, it just might work.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I'm all over Jerry Reagan stuff. I do it all the time. So
it's not like I need to save these studs, you know?
Right.
Yeah, they're not working now.
Do what you got to do. If it works, it works.
Right. And I wound up with them because the merchant was out of the bolts and he said, well, I'll offer you the stud kit for the same price since I'm out of the bolts. I said, sure. After he said a lot of people use them on racing engines, which is true.
Yes.
But they were not the right thing for me. So,
In reference to tools, I'm going to give a shameless plug to the Atlanta Community Tool Bank, which does or at least they did. I don't know what their plans are for this year, just because of the obvious pandemic reasons. But they have what's called a tool rush sale every fall, and they get a bunch of donations from companies that are overstocked. You know, they have too much inventory, or they found out that they printed a run of tools that are printed incorrectly, like something was misspelled somewhere on the package, things like that. And so they donate those to the tool bank. The tool bank then sells them to forward their mission. And for you and me and everyone else, not only are we supporting their mission, but you can go in and get tools that are upwards of 40% off of retail.
I'm pulling them up now.
Yeah.
That's a great resource.
It's a great resource. I mean, you know, they're all into home building and it's the tool bank. So it's, you know, a wide variety of things, but I mean, heck, a tool is a tool is a tool. You know, I've seen people walk out of there with screwdriver sets for $2. Nice. And good, and good screwdrivers, right? Not just the simple old El Cheapos, but the, like, I've seen DeWalt pancake air compressors go out the door for $10 each.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm only finding lending on their website. I'm not finding sales.
Well, check out the Tool Bank. I would encourage the public to do that as well. They're an organization that's worth knowing. They don't even know that I'm mentioning them today, but they do the Tool Rush thing, which I think we should all go check out if we get the chance.
And also, I want to note while I'm on here, there's a virtual tool training center. So they have virtual training on how to use some of these tools as well, which looks interesting to check out.
Yeah, they have an education center. I was there when they were first getting that granted, getting the grants to put that together. But they do classes and the whole shebang. I would be curious to see what their slate of operations has looking like in pandemic. But yeah, you found it?
Hold on. Saturday, November 14th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. This is down on Englewood Avenue.
Yep.
Looks like it's on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, between now and November, who knows what the world will look like these days.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And if we can go, then let's go. And if we're still doing the social distancing thing, then you know, we'll still support them, but we'll have to figure that out.
I have mask. I will travel.
Yep.
Masks echo everywhere.
If they've got a chain hoist with about a 500-pound capacity that I can hang from my garage ceiling, I call dibs on it.
Just make sure the beam you're hanging it from has the capacity as well.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say, I think my whole garage would just come falling right down.
Well, I've already got, joints, I think, coming down in the garage, so I definitely can't do that. I've got structural issues in my garage.
Ben, there's actually no telling what comes through the door of that place. I've seen, I mean, it's not all new stuff. I don't mean to make it sound like it's all new stuff, but right. You know, they'll have like old drill presses that someone doesn't want anymore and they all work.
Yeah, if it works, it works.
So in any case, all right, what's next on our agenda? How about we talk about road trips for the summer?
Okay.
Don, I think that was yours, Don. Are you going to go anywhere?
I wish, we keep thinking about it. Last year, My family has always owned motorhomes, RVs, you know, the actual class, the large class size where you're driving it and everything, and you pull a car behind you. Since I was really tiny, I mean, my first one was a Winnebago Mini Winnie. And my dad got Parkinson's a few years ago, so they sold their last one that they owned. And last summer, we rented a Class B RV, and took it up to Pennsylvania, where my family's from, and literally an entire month with my parents and my sister and myself, like we were when we were kids, and drove it on up. But when it was just amazing, got stung by a wasp in the middle of nowhere. There was like the nearest hospital was 3 hours away in the middle of West Virginia mountains, and fell over a rock, dropped a log on my foot. I mean, I love road trips. They're just fantastic.
Sure, I can see why.
I remember because I'm an Army brat, when we were young, we would, you know, go from post to post, and we'd live in this motorhome until we got our assigned place on base, which we had this thing called an Explorer, but it was a complete unibody fiberglass, and it was fascinating. Motorhome, and we were driving out to the Grand Canyon, or maybe this might have been the Brave Winnebago, but we were out there, and there's dust all over the vehicle because you're out there in the middle of the high Sierra, high desert, and I wanted to draw on the back of it, so I picked up a rock and started making, you know, stick figures on the back of the motorhome, and my dad comes out, and he looks at me, and he starts yelling at me, and I'm like, look, what my beautiful art. He's like, I had etched into the fiberglass.
Oh, whoops.
And it was never going to come off. Like, it was their permanent marker. So I hope the kids I hope people are going to, either if they don't buy, rent and get on those summer road trips. I'm not one for roughing it and just throwing stuff in the back of the SUV and having a tent, but, you know, seek out these kind of road trip adventures.
Oh yeah, I agree. This makes me think of a couple things. I mean, we could have a huge, much longer discussion about road trips, and we should. But it also makes me think from time to time we've thought about doing that for the thing about cars, and both as a video production and as just an audio production. Pandemic has sort of put the brakes on a lot of the plans that we might have done this year. But I think we should still keep these ideas on the table. It would be cool to figure out how to get all of us into an RV, or at least a couple RVs maybe, and have some fun going across the country.
And if you can't afford the big old RV, then what you can do is go down to, you know, anywhere from Wally World to the outdoor store for, you know, a couple $100. You can outfit yourself very well for tent camping. And I suggest this because a lot of places where you can find a decent campground are up in woodsy places that have lots of nice curvy roads too.
Now, exactly.
Ben, yeah. Ben, you know I can't be very far from my hairdryer, right?
Yeah. You know, we can make it vehicularly portable though.
Oh, definitely. Now,
and of course, if you want to go high end, you know, the Mercedes Sprinter is that upscale as a Citation. And I
oh
was
my
just
goodness. Yeah, they're
the
awesome.
At the new Summit package, if it's a nice little starter vehicle for a very large sum of money.
And as far as taking your hairdryer on the road, this is a good reason to buy yourself a classic Porsche, because it has it's not only a high-performance car, but it has an air-cooled engine. All you have to do is just stick an extra duct on the cooling shrouds and, you know, snake it out to where you are, and you're golden.
Excellent.
The real joke for any listener who doesn't know me is that I actually have no hair. So the idea of me needing a hairdryer is laughable just by itself.
You've heard of the hairdryer 280, right? Or 2x80? You've got two windows, you roll them down, you drive 80 miles an hour, it's a hairdryer.
Yeah, I just put the convertible down on my CLK and just go that way too. So
exactly.
Yeah.
I would think that would be good for the 80s hairstyle.
So
Yeah.
Back to the topic of road trips. Let's dream for a second. And if we decide that a road trip is feasible, where are each of us going? Let's start with Dawn.
Oh gosh. Where haven't I been? I've been almost at all 50, the lower, well, not, okay, so not Hawaii, but the lower 48. I've been to every state.
Now that's remarkable. Many people can't say that.
Well, it's because I'm an Army brat. We've been everywhere. One time my dad, we drove out literally to Denver for a cocktail party. We took us 2 weeks so that my dad could go to a JC's cocktail party in downtown Denver. And we RV'd it the whole time. I have to say that I have not seen the Grand Tetons or Yosemite or Yellowstone. Is an adult. I remember being there when I was really, really young. But yeah, I would like to go there. That's where I'd like to go.
Yeah. Becca, where would you go?
I don't even know. I know there have been so many places I've wanted to go. Recently, we've just been talking about how the boys and I want to get back up to Michigan again, where all my family is. If people remember me going up there a couple of times in the past couple of years, it's a bit of a haul. But you know, I love going up there. It's just, you know,
yeah.
It takes a while to get up there, and two kids saying, "Are we there yet?" for 13 hours. It's no picnic. Without them, I don't know. There's places I've wanted to go. I know I've always wanted to go to Lake Tahoe.
Yeah.
Any of the corners. I don't care. I know there's totally different areas. I don't know. That's a really good question. At this point, though, you know, I've been craving Tale of the Dragon again. It's just none of my fun cars are really up for that right now. I mean, we all know what the G8's doing.
Yeah.
I would rather, fix the Mustang suspension before taking her on that. And a Jeep just probably wouldn't be as fun, but there's other trails. Maybe aim closer. Yeah. One of the other trails by the Tail, possibly.
Speaking for myself, I think I would choose West Coast. I would love to spend some time just doing up and down West Coast, particularly the Pacific Northwest. I would love to get into that area. But what about you, Ben? Where would you go?
Oh, well, depending on how far into the realm of fantasy we're talking here, I could think of several good ones. One would be the Alps on a motorcycle. Another one would be an epic 6 or 7 week, you know, extravaganza through the mountain and Pacific time zones, including some of British Columbia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and do all this in, say, a brand new Lotus Evora GT.
I did the Alps in a VW Bug.
Cool.
That's not cool. You have to get out and push. I mean, yeah.
And have you seen how expensive Bug cars are anymore?
And in a Chevy. It was a Dodge van. So I've done the Alps 3 times now in various right. sized vehicles.
The 73 Super Beetle I had in 11th grade would have handled them easily.
Yeah. Oh, holy mackerel. You know what we forgot to do today?
What'd we forgot?
Grand Trivia Auto.
We have not done Grand Trivia Auto.
And we're less than 10 here.
Less than 10. Can we do 1 in 10? All right, let's do 1 in 10. All right, the Grand Trivia Auto question for today is... Harley Earl introduced what features to the Chevy Cadillac in 1948? Was it wheel wells? Was it a radio? Was it blinkers, turn signals? Was it tail fins? Or was it actually side mirrors?
In what year?
It was the 48 Chevy Cadillac.
Okay.
1948.
Cadillac, not Chevy, right?
It's being described here as a Chevy Cadillac.
Okay. I think.
Yeah. Hold your tongue on that, Ben. We'll split that hair at the answer. So, real quick, then. Where did we leave off with our topics list?
Jeep.
We were talking about
road trips.
Jeep. Yes. Becca.
Which is exactly why I call my Liberty Jeepish, because I've always done that with Jeeps. Jeep. I was sitting here drooling before we began recording, and I stumbled upon just some new information on it, and I'm looking at the Wrangler, and it says that they now have available a 3.0 liter EcoDiesel V6.
Awesome.
Available for the Wrangler, which I found interesting, and as another side note, there's apparently... also an electric motor for some that provides additional torque when you are going rock crawling.
Interesting.
Wow.
So some interesting new features are coming around to Wrangler apparently for 2020.
So what you're saying is you'll be able to flip the thing even faster.
One would hope that the problems of the past have at least gotten better or easily repairable, one would hope.
Right. And I'm joking, of course. I mean, I love rock crawling Jeeps. I would love to go try that one day and hopefully not hurt myself or anyone else.
Well, the greatest thing with that diesel is low end torque.
Yes.
So it's not like you're going to do it faster, but you're going to do it more powerfully.
Yeah.
Right.
And some of the Wranglers look at me like, you know, I'm the retarded cousin and the Link and the Liberty, but I've got a 4x4 and theoretically she can be a rock crawler.
Right. Well, you'd have to make some suspension changes at a minimum.
Not a ton. She's pretty ready.
Yeah. No, I'll back you up on that because it's a surprising number of vehicles that will do a surprising number of things with just a little more ground clearance. You can find on YouTube somewhere where somebody has taken a Subaru Legacy sedan and done hardly a thing to it. All they've done is increase the ground clearance by something like 4 inches. They haven't modified anything else, and they took it on a crawling trail and did some amazingly able things with it.
That's interesting.
Well, yeah. It's like my Mustang. At one point, I actually lowered her, and the guy that did the specs was NMRA, National Mustang Racers Association. He had miscalculated. So before she was as low as she is now, when she was more stock clearance, I had actually hopped a curb to get around an annoying car in my Mustang, and the looks I got just of your curb hopping in a Mustang. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of cars are very capable, but the Liberty is also very much like the Wrangler with a different shell. And, you know, like I said, 4x4 model, it's the 3.7 liter. She's ready to go.
My friend Donnie would jokingly say that I could turn any car into an off-road vehicle.
Yes, you can technically.
I used to have an 83 Accord that as long as the drive wheels were touching, it would crawl out of anything.
Yeah. Well, in his case, Donnie was just saying that I would drive a car anywhere, anytime, for any reason.
There you go.
I was going to say, have you seen the 4x4 Mustang that people have built? There's all kinds of 4x4 Mustangs out there, all jacked up and monster trucked. And
right. All right, let's do Grand Trivia Auto and close out because we've got a five-minute countdown happening now. So our Grand Trivia Auto question for the day is, Harley Earl introduced what feature to the Chevy Cadillac in 1948? Was it side mirrors? Was it tail fins? Was it turn signals / blinkers? Was it a radio? Or was it wheel wells? And I'm like, wheel wells? Were all cars open-wheeled until then? I'm like, what was that? I guess, you know, I don't know why we'd include wheel wells as a feature. But Ben, I think, knows the answer to this question. So let's start with Don.
Oh, my. 48. I'm thinking, okay, so...
Maybe we should pool our knowledge here.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I'm going to go in for the big, you know, going into the 50s. I'm going to say the tail fins.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Becca?
I'm saying no on the tail fins. 48, it's way too early. Oh, God.
3 minutes.
Okay, so it was tail fins, radio, wheel well, or turn signals.
Or side mirrors.
God, I feel like they were all around in some incarnation except the tail fins. Dagnabbit, fine. I'm going to throw just random out there, wheel wells.
Ben, you want to answer the question?
Well, what is really well known is that the 1948 Cadillac was the first Cadillac to have tail fins. Now, they were not sharp and pointy like what you saw by 59 or 60, but they were nice, cute little rounded ones just above the tail lights, and the curvature of them was modeled on the vertical fin of the tail of a P-38 Lightning.
Right.
And the story goes that engineers were actually sent to an Air Force base to take measurements and photos and things to get it right.
I have to look at this because the majority of people started going for fins around 56.
So that is the correct answer. The answer is Harley Earl introduced tail fins in the Cadillac in 1948.
And they
stayed on the car for another decade.
It helps for me because all of my relatives had very old cars. I mean, we had a 52 Chevy. We had a bunch of 40 cars. So I grew up around really old cars.
Okay. I would not even call this a tail fin. This thing has a bump on its butt. I'm looking at this. Is how can you call that a fin?
Well, it's one cute little bump on each fender.
I'll give
you a bump on each fender.
On that note, thank you as always to our listeners for joining us in this episode of The Thing About Cars. You guys be careful out there. We'll see you with another episode in about a week. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. I'm winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.